Chapter 10. The next day started early again, but the perpetual overcast sky that was typical to Ohio had come back. I supposed it was lucky we'd had so many sunny days in a row. Thunderstorm season would be here before too long, and Ipseth would get her fill of rain. Though a part of me did look forward to seeing the beautiful woman witness her first real storm. I made us some pancakes from a mix out of a box, slathered them in butter and syrup, and proudly served them up to my wife.
"Mmm, by the gods,"
she said, as she took her first bite.
"They are so sweet."
I would never tire of the wonder Ipseth had about little things I took for granted. "Up here we say, 'Oh my God,'" I replied. "It might help if you start trying to pick up phrases like that when we watch TV."
"Oh, my God,"
the elven woman repeated with a smile.
"Humans only have one?"
"It depends on the human," I said, as I took a bite of pancakes. "I don't have any. Mostly, it's just a phrase people use."
"I will try to remember that, then,"
Ipseth nodded before she dove back into her plate. Soon, Isaac Yoder and his small crew of workmen came, and I was in for another surprise. I'd assumed Yoder would be a middle-aged man with a beard and no mustache, dressed in black trousers and a short-sleeved button-up shirt with a wide-brimmed hat. Instead, he was a clean-shaven man in his late 20s with long, dark hair and wearing a white t-shirt, jeans, and work boots. "Hi," I said, as I shook his hand. "I'm Isaac," the man introduced himself. "I can see you're confused." "Not to be rude," I grinned, "but a little. I'm just, ish," Isaac said while smiling back, and he waved his hand a little. "It's a family thing, but we'll get the work done lickety-split, don't you worry." The two men Isaac had with him were also dressed in regular clothes, but they had the mustache-less beards that showed they were married Amish men, and I didn't ask about it further. Then they got to work on installing an aluminum hatch-like door over the entrance of the tunnel.
"I don't suppose we could cut back some of these bushes?" the beardless man asked as his guys carried the door over.
"I'd rather leave them," I answered with an apologetic wince. "It kinda keeps the nosy neighbor from knowing it's there."
"I understand,"
Isaac said as he watched his workmen struggling to get the door into the bushes.
"No point in having a secret bunker if everyone can see it."
"Yep," I replied neutrally. Isaac and his men seemed to know what they were doing, because they had the whole thing finished in a couple of hours.
"We used quick dry cement," Isaac said as his workmen cleaned up. "But give it a few hours to cure. Here are the keys."
Yoder handed me a key ring with two keys attached. "I can't believe you had a door like that on hand," I replied, as I looked at the keys.
"Oh, it was from another job that fell through."
The dark-haired man shrugged.
"Sometimes prepper types can be squirrely. No offense. I was just glad to not have it taking up space in the shop anymore."
I thanked Yoder for fitting me in so quickly, and he promised to send me an invoice. Then I went back into the house and found Ipseth cleaning up my breakfast mess. The decision to go back to the gloom again was going to bother her. I knew that already. But after getting a taste of what it was like, fighting the Nykdors to rescue the elven woman, taking out those disgusting orc bandits, and the thrill of finding treasure along the way, I was feeling the pull to go back and explore deeper. I knew there were towns and cities I hadn't seen down there yet, but there was also the problem of Ursinger. Ipseth's half-brother was just a name to me, but for the violet-eyed woman, he was her childhood boogeyman. A part of me suspected I would have to deal with a night elf chieftain before too long, since it might just be a matter of time before Ursinger became a problem. No one in the gloom seemed to know how to get to the surface, but the dead Nictor in the tunnels had figured it out. How long would that last? "Ibseth," I said, as I leaned against the counter she was wiping down.
"Yes, my love,"
the blue-skinned woman purred. "I know you're not going to like this," I said cautiously, "but I think I might go down into the gloom again." The elven woman stopped cleaning for a moment and looked at me with her wide eyes.
"How soon?"
she asked, after a long moment of silence. "Tonight, maybe," I replied, "after it gets dark."
"If that is what you wish,"
the white-haired woman whispered as she looked down. "If you don't want me to go, I won't," I said, and reached out to touch her shoulder.
"It is not my place to tell you what to do, husband."
"Things aren't like that up here," I said, as I gently lifted her chin to look into her beautiful eyes. "You get to have an opinion."
"Then it is my opinion,"
the elven woman said without anger or malice,
"that you must do what you think is best. I will miss you and pray to the gods for your safe return, but I will not stand in your way."
"You're an amazing woman," I grinned. "Has anyone ever told you that?"
"You may spend your life telling me, Eddie,"
Ibseth said with a mischievous smile.
"Because your praise is the only one that matters to me."
I spent the rest of the day with my incredible wife, but eventually, the dumpster rental company came and hauled the junk away, and I started to get everything ready for my next trip into the tunnels. I cleaned and looked over my rifle and pistol, and then I counted up the rounds I had left. After that, I packed up the jerky I hadn't finished the last time, as well as the trail mix, and refilled my canteen. I also brought my sketchbook along again, so I could start a map of the places I'd been to so far. I would try to stick to the southern region again, since Ibseth said it was less populated. Part of me really wanted to see what a settlement in the gloom was like, since I had only a vague idea of how the people down there lived from things the white-haired woman had told me. Ibseth had mentioned dwarves, gnomes, and other people, and I wondered how different they were from the fantasy versions I knew from books and movies. There was only one way to find out. Once I had everything gathered up and was dressed again in my blue camo, I was ready to go. "You're sure you're okay with this?" I asked my wife again.
"You are a kind and gentle man,"
Ibseth said as she stood before me to say goodbye.
"But you are also a warrior. You must go and explore, fight monsters, and grow your fortune. I am happy to have found such a man, and I will make sure I support you as a wife should by ensuring your home is clean. You have excellent food to eat, and your children honor you."
I leaned down and kissed her, but I knew I was the one who was fortunate. "I'll try to be back before sunrise again," I promised.
"May we go gigging for frogs again when you return?"
she asked, as she smiled at me. "It's a date," I grinned. Then I headed out the back door into the warm night air. It was still overcast, so there were no stars out, but the light of the back porch was enough for me to find my way through the bushes and unlock the new hatch-style door. Then I pulled the hatch back down and descended the ladder, and it locked from the inside with a lever, which was convenient, since fooling around with a key on the ladder in the dark would have been a hassle. I thought about installing a motion sensor light down at the bottom of the entrance. It could serve a double purpose of lighting the area around the ladder for me and blinding any denizens of the gloom if they ever found a way to the surface tunnels, so I added that to my ongoing list of possible improvements. I got out my flashlight and made my way through to the iron doors and then out into the underground forest. Here, close to the hidden door, it was usually fairly safe, from my experiences so far, so I put away my flashlight and pulled out my sketchbook. Then I started filling out the map I decided to make, and I added in the features I was most familiar with. I sketched out what I knew of the forest, the clearing, streams, and rivers, but I left out the location of the hidden door, in case something happened and the map fell into the wrong hands. It was kind of rough, and I was sure the distances weren't exactly accurate, but it was really more a way to note the landmarks I knew. As I started south, I kept an eye on the tree lining for flying nyctors, and was disappointed when I didn't cross paths with the brownies again. I would stop occasionally to fill out more of the map, and I jotted down the mushroom forest and the underground lake with its majestic waterfall. After I drew what I remembered of the cavern where I'd fought the orc bandits, I chose a different route after the mushroom forest and hoped to find something new. There was a series of winding tunnels that sloped slightly downward, and I followed those and added them to the map as well. Down here, the glowing blue mushrooms grew in sporadic clumps, and I had to use my flashlight. From time to time, I did hear scurrying sounds of creatures that made their homes in the caves as they echoed through the tunnels, and once I caught sight of the furry black haunches of some small burrowing animal as it scurried out of sight. But I didn't run into any of the intelligent beings that lived down here. Eventually, I came into another of the large caverns where the mushrooms grew larger and more plentiful, and as I came out of the tunnel, I saw a wide subterranean river with dark, scrubbly plant life growing on its banks. There were vines and hanging moss growing on an outcropping of rock, and the entrance to another tunnel opened up on a low cliff across the river from me. The caves here had a different feeling than the ones I'd found before. A sort of musky dampness hung in the air, and wisps of fog clung to the corners of rock features and the twists and turns of the cavern. After a moment of consideration, I decided to follow the river upstream, which was headed west, from what I could tell. I was deep enough underground now that I didn't bother with the compass. I had no way of knowing how reliable it would be down here, and if I got turned around, I might not be able to find my way back. Along the bank of the slow-moving river, there was the buzz of insects, and I saw a few big-ass beetles with shells that gleamed like green and blue jewels. When I stopped to rest and have a drink of water, I pulled out my sketchbook to continue my map, and one of the beetles landed on my paper. Then I took a picture with my phone so I could draw it later, because I didn't think to bring any colored pencils with me. The thing was about the size of a walnut, and I wondered what they ate down here. I watched as the beetle flew away with its iridescent wings catching the dim light of the mushrooms, but then a chilling, deep-throated roar echoed through the cavern, followed by a loud crash that shook the floor of the cave. Shit! I put away my sketchbook and found an outcropping to hide behind, but after a moment, I realized whatever had made the sound must have been deeper inside the cavern. The roar sounded like it had come from something huge, but that might have been the echoes distorting the sound. I started to follow the river upstream again, and I tried to keep low in case I encountered the beast that had made the sound. The vegetation along the river started to get denser, and short, spindly trees with moss hanging from their branches dotted the riverbank. The trees also began to grow denser as I followed the river, but the trunks were interrupted by occasional boulders covered with a slimy lichen and moss that had fallen from the ceiling ages ago. Then, across the river from me, there was the wide mouth of a cave, and sitting outside of the cave on a huge slime-covered boulder was a massive, insanely ugly creature. It must have been 10 feet tall when standing, and its grayish-brown skin was mottled and lumpy. The thing had two long, muscular arms and short, stump-like legs that ended in flat feet with overgrown, yellowed toenails. Its head was too small for its body, and lank, greasy black hair fell to its big, sloping shoulders in tangled mats.
The creature's beady black eyes were dull as it smashed a massive club on the ground, and it crushed the bones littering the area around the cave's mouth. The ground shook with the force, and bits of white and yellowed bone flew up into the air. What was most interesting about the huge, terrifying creature were the brightly colored jewels that seemed to be embedded into its skin. As the thing raised its arm to slam its club down again, the dim, blue light of the gloom shone on the jewels in its skin in hues of green, pink, blue, and purple. What the hell was that thing? I watched the monster from behind the cover of the spindly trees, and I wondered if I could take it, or if I should just leave it alone. Then I heard a small sound, like a footstep next to me, and I felt the cold steel of a blade as it was pressed against my neck.
What the fuck are you supposed to be?
A woman's voice hissed. I looked up and over my shoulder to see a woman with reddish skin and two curving black horns nestled in her long, strawberry blonde hair. The woman's beautiful face was angular, and her eyes were black as coal. The leather armor she wore was fitted tightly to her thin, athletic frame and cupped her small breasts to show a hint of cleavage, and I had to force my eyes away from the tantalizing bit of skin. Over her armor, the woman wore a black, travel-stained cloak, and the sword she held was short with a black metal hilt wrought to look like rope. "I'm an Eddie," I replied, and I was careful to hold very still and not make any sudden movements.
"I've never heard of an Eddie,"
the horned woman said as she bared her teeth in a snarl.
"But I have dibs on this troll, so I shall kindly ask you to fuck off."
The red-skinned woman had an accent similar to Ibseth, but it seemed to not be as polished, and when she spoke, I noticed her canine teeth were slightly longer and sharper than normal, and they added a bit of erotic danger to the pout of her full lips. "I don't know," I said quietly as I glanced across the river. "That's a pretty big troll."
"Are we looking at the same troll?"
the horned woman asked with a low laugh.
"It is barely more than 3 meters tall, the runt of his litter, likely ejected from his clan for his weakness."
"Still bigger than you or me," I replied, and tried to make my tone conversational, as if a sword wasn't being pressed against my neck. "If you're planning on fighting it, maybe I could help, and then we can split whatever we find." The red-skinned woman pulled her sword away from my neck and looked at me with a mix of confusion and pity.
"You really are strange,"
she sighed.
"Fight a troll? I was going to distract him and sneak into his cave."
"And just leave all those jewels he's got in his skin?" I said, as I slowly rose and stepped back from the fierce-looking woman.
"Troll's hide is worth its weight in gold,"
the horned woman said, as she looked across the river with a greedy glint in her black eyes.
"But you would have to be mad to try and skin that thing."
"That's why I have this." I grinned and showed the strange woman my AK.
"And what is that?"
she scoffed.
"It looks like a garden tool."
"Think of it like a crossbow, but way better," I replied.
"It would have to be to get through a troll's thick hide."
"I'm not saying it will be easy," I said, "but it seems to be worth a try, if you ask me."
"I do not know where Eddies come from,"
the horned woman said as she narrowed her dark eyes at me.
"Perhaps you are as brave as you are stupid. Still, my mother taught me not to leave money on the table. If you have a plan, then I might let you help me. But if you try anything funny, you will wish the troll had killed you by the time I am done with you."
"I guess that's fair," I grinned. "And Eddie is my name, not what I am. What's yours?"
"Amrilla, the half-breed,"
the red-skinned woman replied as she lifted her pointed chin.
"Perhaps you've heard of me. Most have."
"I'm not from around here," I replied with a shrug. I was curious as to what breed she was considered to be half of, but I didn't think she would admit that to a stranger.
Clearly.
Amrilla snorted while she looked me up and down.
What is your plan, then, Eddie?
Well, I said, and looked across the river where the troll was still amusing himself by pummeling the scattered bones around its cave. You were planning on distracting it. So, once you've drawn its attention, I'll come out and start shooting. Then you try to keep it confused until I can bring it down.
That's not much of a plan,
the horned woman said as she glanced at me skeptically. The less there is, I replied in a philosophic tone, the less there is to go wrong.
Well, if nothing else, I can get into the cave while the troll is busy beating you to death.
Amrilla scoffed. See, I said sarcastically, everybody gets what they want.
Aim for his knees,
she said.
That's the only place they are weak. Well, and their eyes, but it would be harder to hit them there because of their sloping brow.
Thanks for the advice.
Yeah, well, it's been nice knowing you for a few moments, Eddie. I hope the troll doesn't kill you. I quite like the odd way you look.
Thanks. I smiled at her, and then I quietly moved over to the edge of the river, just behind one of the slime-covered boulders, put down my backpack, and pulled out my headphones. I should warn you that this is going to get loud, I said, but as I looked around for Amrilla, I realized the horned beauty was gone. Somehow, the fierce-looking woman had silently slipped away while my back was turned. Well, I tried, I said quietly to myself, as I turned to take aim at the troll, who was about 100 yards away. I hoped the red-skinned woman wouldn't be temporarily deafened by the sound of the AK as it echoed on the cavern walls, but it was going to be loud as fuck. I waited patiently to see if she'd stuck around to distract the troll, and I looked down my rifle at the big brute. He was about 50 yards away now, so I was able to point my iron sights right at the big joint of his baseball-sized knee. The monster's mottled, lumpy hide looked similar to an elephant, and I still had a fair amount of ammo left. The spare magazines kept close in the roomy pockets of my blue fatigues, but I wanted to be sure I had enough left if I ran into trouble when I made my way back to the surface. I didn't know how well the bullets would go through the monster, but it was an AK. It would probably punch right through. Right? I took a deep, slow breath and tried to ignore how sweaty my palms felt. The seconds ticked by, and it felt like ages before I saw Amrilla appear on the other bank. She slinked up behind the troll as he raised and slammed down his club mindlessly on the now crushed bones, and then she hid behind an outcropping, raising her hands up on either side of her mouth, and made a strange squealing noise with her face pointed away from the troll. I assumed the horned woman was mimicking the sound the wild pigs I'd come across in the mushroom forest made when wounded, and the squeal echoed through the cavern until it was impossible to tell where it was coming from. The troll stood ponderously and looked around behind him with a slack smile on his stupid face. As it turned and started to move, Amrilla jumped out of her hiding place, ran behind the distracted troll, and angled toward the cave. Her positioning meant the troll was right between us, and it would be all too easy for a stray bullet from my AK to hit her. Fucking rule 4 of gun safety, I cursed, as I jumped out from behind my rock and splashed across the shallow river so I could get an angle on the troll that didn't put the beautiful red-skinned woman in danger. When I reached the other bank, the troll was almost standing next to where the red-skinned woman hid, and I raised my rifle. "Cover your ears, Amrilla!" I shouted, and my own voice was muffled by my ear protection. As the troll slowly turned to look at me, I fired at its knee and hoped to hobble the massive fucker. The AK kicked against my shoulder as soon as I pulled the trigger, and chunks of the monster's gray hide blew away from his knee like old dusty paint. But there was only a trickle of blood where a bullet had managed to penetrate the thing's thick skin. Shit! Arrgh! The monster raised his hands up to the holes that served as his ears while he still gripped his huge club in his left hand. But now it was looking right at me, and his enraged roar was loud enough for me to clearly hear through my headphones. He obviously was hurt more from the sound of the rifle going off than the actual damage the bullet caused to his knee. Double shit. The massively ugly thing advanced on me with its club raised, and since I sure as fuck didn't want to get into the range of his club, I moved back as I aimed my rifle at the same knee I'd already hit. My heart was pounding, he was moving, and my vision was twisting a bit with nerves, so I accidentally jerked the trigger twice, and my bullets hit the beast higher up on his thigh. He didn't seem to care. Triple shit. Then, Amrilla ran up behind the creature, swung her short sword, and sunk it into the troll's other leg. As the beast roared again and looked down at the horned woman, Amrilla wrenched her sword free with a spray of blood and ran toward the river. The troll started to raise its club to strike the red-skinned woman with a powerful blow, but I fired at the monster's knee again with two quick shots. There was now a bloody hole near the troll's kneecap. The frustrated beast began to rage as he slammed his club to the ground, which caused the floor of the cavern to shake from the force, and then the creature looked back and forth between me and the horned woman for a moment as his dumb brain tried to decide who to smash first. The troll must have decided I was the bigger threat, because he started to lurch toward me again. Adrenaline rushed through me and caused my ears to ring, so I took a steadying breath as I stood in place and aimed at the thing's bloody kneecap again. I shot another two rounds at his knee that he totally ignored, and then I turned to flee. I ran into the cave and put my back against the nearest wall. Fuck! 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 I felt the shock of the huge troll's footsteps, and my stomach was in knots. By my count, I had 13 rounds left in my 20-round mag, and I hoped it would be enough to bring him down before he clobbered me with his club.
Hey!
I heard Amrilla shout.
Over here, you big, ugly son-of-a-dragon shit!
The troll's footsteps faltered, so I leaned back out of the cave and saw the big asshole was only 20 feet away. But Amrilla was running up behind the beast on his left with her sword raised as she screamed more curses at him. Amrilla's distraction meant the troll had his back to me, so I held up my rifle, exhaled, and I fired at the back of his ruined knee. The single bullet ripped into the bloodied hole like a saw and exposed bone this time, and the troll's forward tilt caused him to fall down as his knee gave out from under him. The massive beast dropped his club and hit the ground like a Volkswagen Beetle falling off the roof of a house, and I could feel the shocks from the impact as the ground shook. I fired three times at the thing's head, but my bullets just bounced off the thick bone of his skull and pattered into the rock or the packed sand of the beach around us like hail. Holy shit. Then I could see Amrilla shouting at me, but I couldn't hear a damn thing. What? I shouted as I lifted one side of my headphones.
Aim for his eyes! Now!
The horned woman screamed. The troll started to lift itself, and it roared in pain and frustration as he reached for his club. This fucker won't die! I took a step back from the huge monster and raised my rifle again as I let the ear of my headphones fall back in place. I could see Amrilla cover her ears, and as the troll lifted his head enough for me to see its beady, dull eyes, I fired another quick two bullets right into his face. The hand that was reaching for the club covered the troll's now bloodied face, and when it came away again, covered in thick red blood, I found my resolve, stepped forward, and fired again, and again, and again. Pieces of gray-brown hide flew away as I fired until the magazine was empty, and the troll's face hit the dirt on the cavern floor. I switched out my mag for a full one. Then I waited for a tense moment as I watched for signs of life. But then Amrilla came around the troll, and I could see she was saying something.
"What?"
I shouted again as I removed my headphones.
"It's dead!"
the red-skinned woman shouted, even though she was standing right next to me.
"They're not smart enough to play dead. I can't believe you killed it. I've never heard of one man killing a troll. For a bit there, I wondered what the fuck I was doing trying to distract it. I should have just ran, but by the gods, you killed it. It's dead. Amazing!"
Clearly, she'd been affected by the report of the rifle in the cavern and was having trouble hearing. "Are you sure it's dead?" I asked loudly enough to be sure Amrilla heard me. The horned woman took her short sword and dispassionately stuck it into the troll's neck. The blade only went in an eighth of an inch because of the monster's tough skin, but it stayed still.
"I'm sure,"
she replied, as she pulled out her sword and wiped it off on the troll before placing it back in her scabbard.
"Let's see what's in the cave."
I shrugged and turned toward the cave, which was dark and filthy.
"That weapon is quite impressive,"
Amrilla said as she walked toward the cave with me.
"I've never seen anything like it. Where did you get it?"
"It's called a rifle," I replied, trying to speak loudly enough for the red-skinned woman to hear me. "They're not uncommon where I'm from."
"It seems effective,"
she mused.
"But it makes one hell of a racket. My ears are still ringing. Ah!"
I nodded and thought about what it would take to get a suppressor. They were kind of hard to obtain, since you had to jump through a bunch of hoops and red tape. But there were all kinds of loopholes in the law, so I added finding a way to get a suppressor to my mental list of things to do. Like the mouth of the cave, there were bones scattered everywhere on the inside, some of which had rotting bits of flesh still clinging to them. It smelled awful, like decay and the world's worst BO, and it took an effort not to gag. Without a word, Amrilla and I started to pick our way through the debris on the ground. There were animal bones mixed with ones that looked more humanoid, and pieces of armor and clothing, as well as other personal effects.
"If you find a sword with a black jewel in the hilt,"
the red-skinned woman said in a stern tone,
"it's mine."
"You lost a sword in here?" I asked, as I picked up a small pouch that clinked as if there were coins inside.
"It was my father's,"
Amrilla explained while she looked over one of the larger piles of remains.
"I heard he came here to try to harvest the troll's hide for money. He never returned, so I assumed he was dead."
The horned woman's tone was matter-of-fact when she said this. "I'm so sorry," I replied sympathetically before I looked inside the pouch to see it was filled with silver.
"Why?"
Amrilla asked as she moved aside half-eaten carcasses and was seeming unfazed by the smell.
"My father was a bastard, but I really liked the sword."
"Well, I wasn't expecting that. But then again, things in the gloom always ended up surprising me." "Okay," I shrugged as I continued to look around. There wasn't much in the cave other than a few more gold and silver coins and some ruined armor that had been ripped apart when the troll had fed on the owners.
"Yes!"
Amrilla suddenly exulted as she lifted a beautiful sword from a pile she'd been searching through. It was a little bigger and broader than the one she carried, and in its hilt was set a large black stone. "Congratulations," I grinned.
"Now it's time for the hard part,"
she said, as she pulled out the scabbard from the pile.
"Let's go skin that troll."
The process of skinning the troll was much more difficult than I'd anticipated. I could field dress a deer without batting an eye, but the troll was much closer to a human, and that made my skin crawl. As I watched the horned woman cut into the tough hide of the troll, I got up close to help, since I figured that if I didn't have to look at the whole thing, it would make it easier for me to get my hands dirty. The mottled skin was several times thicker than a deer's, and Amrilla seemed to focus the most on portions with a high concentration of jewels. Once we had several large pieces, we rinsed them off in the river before the red-skinned woman rolled them up, and we both washed off the gore from the fight and getting the hide off the disgusting troll.
That, rifle of yours is pretty handy,
Amrilla said as she stood from washing herself off in the cool river.
How does it work? Is it magic? Seems like magic. Troll hides are almost impossible to chop through, but your weapon killed it easily.
Kind of like magic, I chuckled. It's pretty dangerous.
Would you be up for a little work? I have plenty of connections in Bermshire.
Bermshire? I asked, as I finished washing troll goo off my hands.
Where are you from?
The horned woman asked with a raised eyebrow. Not from around here, I said evasively. Just passing through, really.
I don't wish to be rude,
Amrilla said, but there was suddenly a suspicious note in her voice.
But I've never seen anyone like you, unless you're the tallest gnome in the gloom. But your nose is too small.
My mother fed me really well, I joked. But after talking to Ibseth, I knew saying I was a human from the surface could cause trouble.
You're very funny,
Amrilla said without humor.
But we'll need to go to Bermshire to sell the hides. And not to put too fine a point on the matter, but you'll stick out.
Yeah, I winced. That is a problem.
Here,
the horned woman said as she took off her cloak, handed it to me, and then looked around the riverbank until she found some berries. What are you doing? I asked.
Crush these in your hands and then rub them on your skin.
Amrilla instructed me and handed me the berries.
Try to make it even and don't get any on my cloak.
As I followed the red-skinned woman's orders, Amrilla disappeared into the cave again, and when she came back out, I had rubbed the berries on my face and forearms, which turned them a dark blue color.
If you were not so tall and well-muscled, this would be easier,
she said, as she handed me mismatched pieces of leather armor and some trousers.
But these might fit you.
I'm not putting on anything that was in that cave, I said, as my nose wrinkled in disgust.
Pfft.
Amrilla rolled her black eyes.
Wash them in the river if you must, but I can't take you into town dressed like that. You look like the jester of a chief's second son.
I don't know what that means, I muttered, but I'm sure it's rude.
Just put them on,
the horned woman sighed. After I'd pulled on the clothes and armor, which were probably the cleanest things in the troll's cave, and thrown on the cloak, I turned so Amrilla could see the full picture.
There,
she said, as she stepped back and looked at her work.
At least your pale skin does not glow in the gloom light now.
You think this will work? I asked, as I pulled on the cloak.
Maybe,
she said with a wide grin.
If you keep the hood up and stoop when you walk. You're entirely too tall.
Thanks, I snorted, before I gathered up my backpack where I'd left it on the other bank of the river, and then I offered Amrilla half of the coins I found.
You keep those, partner.
She shook her head. A partner? I snickered as I gave her a grin.
Well,
her dark eyes flickered to my AK and then to my face.
Your rifle is useful, and you aren't unpleasant to look at. I'll keep the sword, then we'll split the profits from the hide. Then maybe we can talk more about working together. I have lots of stuff to do.
Sure, I chuckled, since I figured only good things could come from having a beautiful woman to help me down here.
Come on, then,
she cheered, as she waved for me to follow her.
We have to see a man about some gold.